You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Central Wisconsin has seen an increase in methamphetamine confiscations. We'll hear why there's been a sudden rise.
First, astronomer Tyler Nordgren's new book chronicles the history of solar eclipses, from the astrologers of ancient China and Babylon to the so-called eclipse chasers of today, who are already preparing for next year's continent-spanning solar eclipse.
Tyler's new book is Sun, Moon, Earth, the history of solar eclipses from omens of doom to Einstein and exoplanets. Tyler, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you've looked at a lot of things up in the sky, and solar eclipses, it sounds like, are one of your most exciting favorite things out there. Why is that?
It is a multi-century experience that is just like anything else that you encounter in nature. And when I finally got a chance to see one, it absolutely blew me away. I knew what was going on, but I could not believe what I was seeing.
Can you describe what that was like?
So as the moon passes in front of the sun, if you are lucky enough to be in one of those special places on Earth that where it happens each year, the temperature drops, the sky grows dark, the lighting turns strange colors, kind of bleach out of things, and then at the moment of totality, you go from what had been a day to suddenly night, as if it was an hour after sunset. The brighter stars and planets come out, and suddenly the sun turns black, and its outer atmosphere, this corona that is like these wispy tendrils that come out. Normally they're utterly invisible, but at the moment of totality, suddenly they're visible, and you're staring up at this strange black hole in the sky, and there is nothing else like it.
Let's get into the science a little and the timing. These are rare, which always used to confuse me because I think, oh, the moon, it's going around every 28 days. Why aren't we having a solar eclipse every 28 days? Not quite that simple, though, I guess.
Unfortunately, the moon's orbit is tilted about 5 degrees with respect to the Earth traveling around the sun. So every month, most every month, the moon just passes invisibly beneath the sun from our vantage point here on Earth. But twice each year, when the moon crosses in front, it's possible to have eclipses. They're called eclipse seasons. So twice each year, you will have lunar eclipses where the moon travels into the Earth's shadow, and then solar eclipses will occur 2 weeks before, 2 weeks after that, when the moon travels in front of the sun. So they happen each year. It's just a matter of where are they visible. And with solar eclipses, you have to be at a special place on Earth where that small shadow of the moon happens to cross over.
And I have to say, while you were just describing what it's like during one, I mean, you can see why ancient peoples might have thought the world was coming to an end. It sounds like it's extraordinary.
Absolutely. I was lucky enough to be living in Portland, Oregon in 1979 when the last one that touched the continental U.S. happened. Unfortunately, it was cloudy, and I was so terrified from the local news reports about burning your eyes out that I hid indoors. And it took me 20 more years before I happened to see one as a professional astronomer in Hungary in 1999. And so I prepared my entire life for this. And yet when it happened, the hair stood up on the back of my neck, and I understood why people would sacrifice slaves or their opponents and enemies in order to bring that sun back again.
Now, these have been scary to people, signs of impending doom, but they've also been, it sounds like, really useful to scientists going back as far as ancient Greece. Can you talk about the benefits of eclipses for science?
Well, one of the first actual calculations that we have of somebody using a solar eclipse to figure out something about our world is when someone in Greece, Anaxagoras, figured out that if a solar eclipse was just the moon blotting out the sun, then the shadow that was cast on the Earth should tell you something about the size of the moon. If you could measure the extent of that shadow across the landscape, you knew that the moon had to be larger. And by going down to the local port and interviewing sailors who came in, he could ask, where were you? Did you actually see this when it happened? And by plotting out where people had and had not seen it, he figured out that the moon had to be at least as large as Greece. So there's one of the first instances of this idea that they could tell us something about our physical world. And then after that, people learned that by precisely timing when they occurred and where, you could compare that with predictions and figure out where you were on the Earth. And eventually, when scientists finally started really paying attention to what was going on, we began to learn something about the features, the geography, if you will, of the sun itself.
You tell a great story in the book about Columbus using the way that we can predict eclipses to his own benefit. It's a story you've never heard before. Could you tell us a quick version of it?
So one of the things that Columbus had done is he had these almanacs of when various celestial events would happen, and these almanacs were all tabulated for a time back in Europe, a location in Europe. And if you know when something happens in Europe and you know when something, that exact same thing, is happening for you locally, that difference in, say, Greenwich time and your local time, that time difference tells you essentially how many degrees across the Earth you are. For every hour of difference, it's 15 degrees eastward or westward across the planet. Well, Columbus was in Jamaica, and he was shipwrecked, and things were going bad. His men had been plundering the local inhabitants, and so he was in danger of this not only a mutiny, but a revolt of the locals. And he went and looked at his almanacs and realized that there was this prediction of a lunar eclipse when the moon passes into the Earth's shadow and the moon turns blood red. And he did some calculations based on where he thought he was and these almanacs, and he figured out that there was a good chance that lunar eclipse would be visible that night. And so he told the locals, gathered the chieftains, and said, God is unhappy with you, and to show his displeasure, he's going to make the moon turn blood red, and only if you repent and start bringing me food again will I intercede and bring the moon back. And sure enough, it happened. And so this was an instance of using modern technology, modern knowledge, to scare other cultures that were less knowledgeable about the events. And one can arguably say it changed the course of history.
We're talking to Tyler Nordgren about eclipses, solar and otherwise. He's the author of the new book, Sun, Moon, Earth. And Tyler, this is exciting because we've got a big one coming up next year, next August. I imagine you're keeping your schedule wide open for interviews leading up to that. Tell us about this upcoming eclipse.
So on August 21st of next summer, there's going to be the first total solar eclipse to cross the continental U.S. since 1979. And if you think about the median age for the U.S. population is about 38. So roughly half the people alive this year in the U.S. were not alive the last time something like this happened here. And on that day, August 21st, the shadow of the moon is going to cross from the coast of Oregon diagonally across the country, across St. Louis, and then out through South Carolina. And so while only people in this narrow diagonal band about 100 miles wide north and south, but stretching from Oregon to South Carolina, will see this. Everybody else in the United States is going to get at least a partial eclipse that day, so they'll be able to see part of the sun being blocked. And so this really is going to be something that every single man, woman, and child in America is going to be experiencing together.
And apparently, I mean, in some places it sounds like it's an incredible boon to the tourist industry. People are booking rooms, what, years in advance to see this at its peak?
Exactly. You take a look at small towns all along this path of totality. I've been working with folks out in Oregon, and they say, yes, the hotels have been booked up. Towns that have a population of about 5,000 are hearing that potentially 20,000 are going to show up on that day. And it's one of the things about this totality is if you follow the path, it crosses through a lot of beautiful countryside, and it misses some really big towns. So it's a lot of wonderful rural, small-town parts of America that are going to get to experience this, and it will be amazing for the local economy.
We'll have a lot of time to figure this out, I guess, Tyler, but you always hear how you are and aren't supposed to view a solar eclipse. In a nutshell, what should we do when the time comes?
Okay, so on that day, if any part of the sun is visible, so if the eclipse is not completely total, then the sun is virtually as bright as any other day of the year. And so you wouldn't stare at the sun on any regular day, so you don't want to stare at the sun on that day. In order to see that partial phase of the eclipse, you'll need some special glasses. And these things cost about $1, maybe $2. You can find them online. If you're in the path of totality, virtually every store is going to have these. And with them, that partial phase of the eclipse will be totally safe, completely safe. If you do manage to be in that path of totality, when the moon finally does perfectly cover the sun, you can take your glasses off, and it will be just awe-inspiring. It'll be no brighter than the full moon, in fact. And so just absolutely wonderful.
And, Tyler, before we let you go, where are you going to be? Where did you decide to watch it?
Well, I still have family up in Oregon, and so I'm going to be out in eastern Oregon, out in the wonderful canyon country out there, and just making a full weekend of it. And since a solar eclipse happens when the moon is in front of the sun, the evenings right before and right after are the darkest nights of the year, and the summer Milky Way will be overhead, and so far away from any city lights, it's going to be spectacular, both by day and night.
Wow, sounds amazing. Thank you so much for telling us about it.
Oh, my pleasure.
That was Tyler Nordgren, the author of Sun, Moon, Earth, The History of Solar Eclipses from Omens of Doom to Einstein and Exoplanets. He's a physics professor at the University of Redlands in California.
Are you going to try to go and watch this somewhere?
I am. Could you hear the wheels of my brain turning?
Just stay well clear of me, because I can guarantee it will be cloudy that day. Incredibly cloudy wherever I happen to be.
All right. Clear of Rob. Check.
Well, coming up, a local police chief tells us about the rise of methamphetamine use in central Wisconsin. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.